喂呀哟，喂呀哎呀哟，喂呀哟，哎呦，喂呀哎呦。
Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Neskay. It was a cool October morning. Ragged waves hissed on the rocky beach, and the big river coursed with power into the west. The Walla Walla headman, Ilepet, strode into the camp of the travelers with his colleagues. They were greeted by the two captains of the travelers' party, Lewis and Clark. Speaking in signs, Ilepet welcomed the white men to his country. As they sat on a blanket and smoked, Ilepet must have noticed that the white men were well organized and armed with American guns.
The Lewis and Clark Expedition, or the Northwestern Corps of Discovery, was in the homeland of our people for about a week on the way out in 1805 and a week on the way back in 1806.
Roberta Connor is the director of the Temuscluk Cultural Institute on the Umatilla Indian Reservation.
Lewis and Clark, in their encounters with our people, noted a number of things about our people, amongst them their hospitality, their honesty, their sincerity, their handsomeness, the abundance of fish, the presence of our horses that they admired.
It was October 19, 1805. Lewis and Clark camped just downriver from Wallula Gap near today's Washington-Oregon state line. They had invited Ilepet to join them, for they were informed that he was the first chief of all the tribes in this quarter.
By the time Lewis and Clark arrived here, our people had been engaged in trade for thousands and thousands of years. Commerce was important to us, and that is why our people were hospitable to the explorers, because they represented the opportunity to create a monopoly in trade if they would help establish a trading post in our area.
Ilepet was eager to establish trade relations with the whites. Guns would protect his people from their enemies. American goods would give them trading clout with their neighbors and ease the burden of their lives. Tin pots, for example, were so valuable that Ilepet would trade a good white horse for one.
There were prophecies that a new people would come and our lives would change. And the prophecies talked about how this life would be difficult for our people for a good deal of time, and then it would change again.
In 1818, Ilepet got his wish. The Northwest Company built a trading post called Fort Nez Perce across the river from Ilepet's village near the mouth of the Walla Walla. The fort ushered in a brief period of prosperity to the local tribes, but commerce also brought conflict. In the 21st century, the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation are experiencing a cultural renaissance. The Longhouse holds weekly Washit services. The tribe's Temuscluk Cultural Institute, built in 1996, is a world-class museum highlighting the culture and history of the tribes and providing an archive for tribal treasures. Crow Shadow Institute is an art school and printing shop, attracting native artists from around the country. The Wild Horse Casino and Resort near Pendleton, Oregon, has brought in enough income for the tribe to start buying back ancestral land and to generate many other beneficial projects. 200 years later, Ilepet's vision of prosperity for his people is at last becoming a reality. I'm Arlie Neskay, and this is Wisdom of the Elders. Elder spirits reside in Kathleen Gordon's heart, spirits that drive her to practice and teach the spiritual values of an earlier day. In today's Elder Wisdom, Brian Bull explores how the Longhouse religion and the traditional way of life of the Cayuse people had made a lasting difference in an elder's life.
Clad in a wing dress with purple and lavender ribbons and a beaded scarf, this elder impresses even before speaking. Ask her what her name is, and she'll first say Kathleen Gordon. But a moment later, she'll smile softly and share a more intimate identity that spans far up the family tree.
I have an Indian name that is after a great-grandmother, and that name is Shaushwinatmai. We carry those Indian names through the generations, and they're passed on to children. when we are told that we are going to be given an Indian name of a certain person that was one of our grandmas or great-grandmother, we're supposed to try to learn as much as we can about that person and then try to conduct ourselves in a manner similar to that person. And they tell me that Shaoxuinat Mai was a very devout woman. She was a very respectful woman, and that she really and truly tried to follow the ways she learned about the Creator and how the Creator wanted human beings to live. And people ask me what Shaoxuinat Mai means, and Shaosh in our language, Cayuse Nesper's language, is quiet. And Winat Mai, when they put that on the end, is usually a woman signifying that it's a female. So Shaosh Winat Mai, I tell them, is a quiet, peaceful woman. And she was one of the last strong medicine women of our tribe.
Gordon is living proof of that strong medicine. Were it not for her grandmother, Gordon's time on Earth would have been brief.
I was born in 1936, and there were two midwives. That cord had choked off my air, and that I was just totally purple. And those midwives unwrapped that cord, and I wasn't breathing. My grandmother grabbed me and breathed into my mouth, just like this, what do they call it now, mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, and just blew, and I came to. And then they slapped me on the backside, and I started crying. But the doctor visited 2 days later. That was the visiting doctor to the reservation. And he told my mother, she's a very frail child. You're lucky she's alive, but she probably will not live 10 years. And here I am now, 67 years old.
When Gordon was old enough, she and her grandmother ventured out on numerous house calls, traveling out into the rolling hills and patchy forests to help out those who were sick. Gordon says these visits clearly demonstrated her grandmother's reputation as a healer.
And we traveled in an old Model A car. Sometimes we'd have to leave in the middle of the night if someone brought a message that someone needed her to go there. It was a very, very interesting life to be able to witness those natural healing times. And she was just such a wonderful, wonderful woman. Just the healing touch of her hand was just so healing. And I always knew if I was very, very sick, as soon as I saw my grandma, that I was going to be well in no time. And the people that were near death, when we would go to a home that I could see, they would use hot rocks, they would use hot water, and they would use their songs. And sometimes they would have sticks either on the floor where people would hit those sticks in rhythm with those songs, or they would sometimes just have a stick and hit the floor with a stick. And those were supposed to be the healing powers of this person healing. And they'd get well. I mean, you'd think the noise and stuff would be disturbing for an ill person, but they would improve. And I still say it was through the power of God that was coming down through the people and the prayers and that. That's what I believe in my heart.
Gordon says her grandmother and other elders not only used their spiritual medicine to help the sick, but also to preach acceptance among their people. Decades of Western settlement had led to interracial relationships, something that caused rifts among the tribe.
Some of our full-blood Indian people were somewhat prejudiced against the breeds, they called them. In our native language, we called them Alaimas. But a lot of our elders that had a lot of wisdom would defend the Alaimas when people would try to put our Alaima people down. They would stand up for them and say, these are our people, they came from our people, and even though there was a mixture of blood, they are still our people. I was real glad that my father learned from his uncle to be very, very proud of your heritage. regardless of whether you are a full blood or not, that whatever our Creator made us to be, that we needed to be very, very proud of who we were, regardless of what other people said.
For Gordon, part of this pride is keeping tradition. She knows that during the past two centuries, government agents and missionaries systematically worked to abolish much of the region's native cultures as a way to civilize and assimilate the natives. Gordon wants today's youth to treasure the tribal language, which she considers a divine gift.
And I tell our people when I try to talk to them about our languages, just like every sound he gave every bird, every different song he gave every bird, every different sound he gave every animal, every different sound he gave everything in the waters and the seas, every sound is so sacred because it's a very unique sound that comes from us. And those languages that he gave to us were sacred, sacred gifts that we were to cherish and teach our young the rest of our days. However, when the new people came across the waters and started wanting to change our lives and, as they said, civilize us, they just could not understand our way of life, living off the land, and they could not understand the sounds coming from our mouths, the sounds of prayer, the songs of worship. They wanted to convert all the Indian people to Catholicism or Protestantism, Methodist. My grandmother, who was a strong, strong Indian doctor, they called her, was converted to Catholicism and then became a very strong Catholic, singing and praying those songs in the native languages. So thank God I still know some of those prayers and hymns in our Cayuse Nez-Perce language. One of the last persons that still can pray and sing in those native languages that were translated. So it's so important to us as elders who have learned through the grace of Almighty God the languages that we know now from our dear grandmothers and grandfathers who were not able to speak English.
In her efforts to keep the old ways alive, Kathleen Gordon hopes that tomorrow's generation will take the elder path. Whether it's using strong medicine to help others, honoring all colors of their people, or celebrating the spiritual teachings by making those beautiful sounds of music and prayer. For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Brian Bull.
Brian Bull is Assistant News Director for Wisconsin Public Radio and is an enrolled member of the Nez Perce tribe. He lives with his wife, two kids, and three cats in Madison, Wisconsin. Coming up in Speaking Native, linguist Don Addison speaks a little Umatilla. In Sacred Landscape, Judy Bluehorse-Skelton talks about efforts to restore the salmon to Northwest rivers. In Tribal Rhythms, Nico Nguyen shares the wisdom of singer and powwow MC Fred Hill. And in Health and Healing, Rose Hybear goes to the gym with two women who love to exercise.
Actually, it gives me a better outlook on how to take care of myself. As long as I've had all this working out, you know, makes me feel great. I just feel like taking on the world.
Stay with us. I'm Arlie Neskai, and this is Wisdom of the Elders.
Hank Williams was an Indian, but John Kennedy wasn't. And Chuck Berry is an Indian, but Michael Jackson ain't. And street people are Indian, but presidents of the United States ain't. And Pancho Villa was an Indian, but Che Guevara was not. And Leonard Peltier is an Indian, and the FBI ain't. And Willie Nelson is an Indian.